You may kill me, but you may never insult me. Who am I? Captain Jack Sparrow.
Get the truth about movies on the movie show.
If he were telling the truth, he wouldn't have told us.
Tell them, Sparrow.
Unless, of course, he knew you wouldn't believe the truth, even if he told it.
Hello?
Joey, it's Ross. I need some help.
Help has come your way because you are listening to the movie show.
What is up?
How are you doing?
This is the movie show
on Active TV.
My name is Sesh.
I'm Ryan.
And today we are joined with
Chris.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm good, man.
That's awesome. We are very, very, very grateful that you're on the show today. And I'm excited for the show because we have had actors. We have had animators.
Yes.
And now we have a cinematographer. Ha!
Or?
Or? Animator.
Cinematographer.
Yeah, how are we gonna...
Okay. So apparently, I did research, and okay. A cinematographer is also known... This is a nice name. I don't know if you've known... I'm sure you know about this. As a painter of light.
Sure, yeah. There's many terms.
So, painter.
Yeah. Painter.
Painter.
There you go. Let's continue. Thank you.
Yes. So, this is going to be a very cool show. I'm excited. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Ryan, are you excited?
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay, cool. So, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure.
Anything.
Sure.
Anything you want.
Sure. I mean, I'm Chris. I moved to Joburg for film.
Okay.
I've been interested in film since 12. So,
oh, wow.
So, I've been doing things for...
For a couple of years.
Over 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. I have an obsessive personality, and I'm definitely obsessed with film. So there's that.
Very, very nice.
Yeah.
Ryan, do you want to start off, or shall I?
Okay, you can start.
Okay.
Kick it off.
I'll kick it off. Do you remember? So you're 12. You said 12.
Yes.
It's when you fell in love with film. So yes. At 12,
yeah.
Do you remember the first moment or scene from a film that made you fall in love with cinematography and why? Or was the was it cinematography at 12, or was it just film in general at 12, and then cinematography came later?
It was film in general, like everything tech aspect, right? I've always wanted to be in performance arts. I wanted to do theater like my whole life. And then at 12, so I don't know if you watched The Maze Runner.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The first one.
So there's a scene where they're running out of the forest and like he was stung by the bees. And like he's running to the camera, and that whole thing was like very like hectically choreographed. And I watched a video on how they did it, and then obviously I saw like their little plates for the maze and everything. And I was like, that is so sick. I love that. That's like such a cool way to tell stories. And then I just like delved into the tech aspect of film because that's what sets it apart from theater. Mm. And it was just really cool because I'm a very tech oriented person. So I was like, this is sick. I love this. I want to do this. And I'm a visual person. I've been painting and drawing since I was 3. So cinematography is essentially just creating an artwork, but with a piece of technology. Sure. And so it seemed perfect.
That is very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Ryan, have you ever like painted?
That is crazy. Yeah.
Are you good?
No.
Because I suck. Like, that's why I wanted to do directing. Because painting is not needed.
Yeah. I tried drawing. No.
I got laughed at. I have literally... People have laughed at me. Scarred as a child. They laughed. I'm joking. I'm over it. They laughed at me for my... They literally looked at what I drew and laughed.
Wow.
I tried singing as well.
You did?
Yeah.
You were good though.
No. Okay. I'm one of those people. I'm like, do you know the song? And I sing it. They're like, no. And then like 2 minutes down the line, the song plays on the radio. Like, I love the song. I'm like, that's the song I was singing.
Sang it.
Yeah. And you're like, okay, I'm tone off or something.
But you do... So I know this about Chris. You do play guitar.
Yes.
And Chris is also a guitarist. Go. Very good. Very, very good guitarist.
Thank her. Yes. Also obsessed with music. So
makes sense.
Is that?
Okay, cool. So I've got multiple questions for you.
Yep.
All right. Imagine your eyes are like a movie camera for a day. What's the most interesting scene you'd love to
She's
frame?
Like, well, that's
yeah,
every
well,
day.
That's
yeah, it happens all the time.
Why? Because you're like...
I see... It's so bad. If I've been working on a film for the next probably 2 weeks, all I'm seeing is shots. Like, my eyes are a camera, and then I'm like trying to get into positions, and like, it's so bad. Yeah, sorry.
So What's the most interesting scene you'd love to frame and capture in your everyday life? Is it A, the hustle and bustle of a busy market? Is it B, a quiet moment between loved ones? C, a beautiful nature landscape? Or D, something totally unexpected and quirky?
Well, define quirky.
I guess it's just something, it's something offish. Yeah, offish. It's, yeah. It's like something a bit like, something you don't see every day, isn't it?
Or like a perspective maybe that like most people don't, I don't know. Quirky, what's quirky?
Definitely.
Well, I suppose I'll go with that one. I don't know, Dean. I tend to, I like complicated things, right?
Oh.
So like in my shooting, I love the genre action. And I'm also obsessed with war. So a lot of what I make is of that cool. caliber. So I suppose that I could find a way to work that in.
So maybe like a car accident
exactly.
scene.
Exactly, yeah.
From the perspective of an ant.
Yes, there we go.
Sitting there and it's like...
Yeah.
That is wild.
Put that one in your notepad.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Actually, that's a good idea.
I'll credit you in the film. Be like, idea from Ryan.
Okay, next question. How do you stay inspired in an industry that can be both creatively fulfilling but also exhausting?
Yeah. I suppose like the people that I'm around, hey, like if, I don't know, most of the people I surround myself with are creatives. And if you're like in a slump or you just can't figure an idea out, generally if you just spend a day with creatives, with your camera, you know, just like not even caring about what you're making, it generally sparks ideas. And on top of that, also just getting away from film. So like, I know people who aren't in film, they watch series and movies to relax. Don't do that. Like, I can't do that, because then all I'm thinking about is what they're doing. And then my work will inevitably just mirror their work. And you're supposed to be your own creative. So I play games. That's a good de-stressor. And then to get like your mind off of film, so when you come back to it, you're fresh, new ideas. Generally.
Very nice.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about the fact that you can't, you're like, oh, I need to take a break. Let me go watch the next season of Prison Break.
I actually saw a post that said,
like,
it's a serious red flag when someone uses true crime to de-stress themselves or like to relax. They're like, apparently it's a very big like red flag for a person to, like, why would you relax to true crime? Anyway. For those that like true crime.
All right. Next one. We all have those moments on set where things go a little sideways. Mm-hmm. What's the funniest and most unexpected thing you've ever had to deal with while trying to get the perfect shot? Is it A, an animal photobombing the scene? B, a sudden hilarious weather change? C, a piece of equipment malfunctioning at the worst possible time? Or D, a surprisingly uncooperative actor, and please don't name any names.
The thing is, the funny part is, I'm not sure. There was a time where we were trying to rig a light. We were shooting a kitchen scene. It's like an island blocking, obviously, the lower part, and we needed a light from below because it was like very very wide shots. And none of our stands would stay, and like the floors are like tile. We don't want scratches. We don't own the place. and none of our stands would stay. So I just grabbed a light and lay on the floor, and the actors had to like walk over me in their blocking, and I just had to try to not laugh.
Or fall asleep eventually. Oh, yeah. You're relaxing.
It's so bad. Because the thing is, people are taking BTS and I can see them at the corner of my eye.
And they're laughing.
Yes. I'm just there trying to hold the lights so that it's lit.
That moment when you're like, and I dreamed of being a cinematographer.
Yeah, and I'm holding a
now
light.
Now I'm lying on the floor holding a
it's
light.
It's all about the light, bro. If this shot's not lit, it doesn't matter that you have the shot. Like,
true. Very true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't stand for that.
That's why I lay down.
That is no lie, Ryan. Okay. Does cinematography, I think this is a very good question, especially for anyone who's interested in cinematography or like has like been in cinematography, and yeah, does it require expensive gear?
No. So, okay. I am of the opinion, and I'm very strongly on this opinion, that unless you start with the absolute like bare minimum, you will never be the great. Like, you will never be of the greats. You need to start with the least, not even a light, you're just using the sun, your phone, cheap camera that you got from grandma, I don't know. Like, you build it up. Because the thing is, unless you can understand everything about a 5,000 rand camera, you will never understand, like, even 50% of a 30,000 rand camera.
Yeah, true.
Let alone a 500,000 rand camera. Like, you need to learn. It's like, the thing is, cinematography at its basics, it's artwork. It's composition and it's lighting. That's all it is. And so if you understand that on anything, even your phone, you'll understand cinematography, and then you can rack up money and buy something good so that you can, you know, have, like, it's all about, like, codecs. You know, people want specific specifications for what they're hiring you for, and some cameras just can't output that.
Yeah.
That's why you need more expensive cameras, because you need to output specific codecs and specific resolutions and even bit depths. Like, if you're wanting to capture colors, right, you need a high bit depth, otherwise you're gonna have, like, this banding in your frame. And unfortunately, that comes with a price tag. Yeah. But you don't need to start with that. Yeah.
What is, like, if either the first piece of equipment you bought, like, that you, like, saved up for and you're like, I'm going to get this, or, like, that you would like to get, what would it be? What brand, what make, what item?
So the first proper camera I bought, it's kind of recent, actually, is I bought the FX30, right? So I'm a Sony. I used to be a Canon. They're using Canon. I used to be a Canon lover. I had my sister had, she had like, I think, three Canons over time. And I would use them, and I like the interface of it. But unfortunately, if you've worked with color and you've worked with footage for enough years, you know that Sony's better. It just is. So, and for I deal with the user interface because it's trash. I don't know who's doing their user interface, but oh my goodness, they need to rehire someone. I don't like, you know. but it's a better camera, so I've got that. But eventually, one day when I'm like Roger Deakins level, I'll own my own Arri Mini LF, because I'm an Arri girl. I love Arri. It's better than Sony, in my opinion.
Wow.
Yeah, it's controversial.
I see a lot of those. I see a lot of those that brand around. Quite a lot.
It's German engineering, and I'm not being biased or anything. I am of German descent. But you know, it's so good. I prefer the color space of an Arri, but that's controversial. Many people prefer Sony, like a Sony Venice, but yeah, very cool.
Yeah. Nice. Good answer. That's the correct one, okay. By the way.
That's the correct answer.
Okay.
You didn't know you were being graded on this.
Yes, I did. Well, you know.
Right, so far you're passing?
Yep.
Okay. If you were telling the story of your life as a movie, what would be the opening shot and what kind of a look would it have? A bright and optimistic sunrise. B, mysterious and shadowy silhouette. C, a fast-paced montage of key moments. Or D, something totally abstract and, weird.
Probably C.
Fast-paced.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, man.
Okay, describe it.
You gotta move from moment to moment. I do a lot. I have a lot of hobbies. I never stay still, which is fun because, I mean, you get a lot done, but also tiring. But, you know, sleep is for the dead. Yeah.
Said every filmmaker ever.
Yeah, literally, man. We're all task orientated, man. We're good with the 12
and
hours.
I'm really tired. But it's okay. No, I'm joking.
It's all about the denial. You know, yeah. As soon as you can start denying that you're sleep deprived, you'll be fine.
Denial until coffee. That's it.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. There yes. We go.
The caffeine addiction's real, bro.
We'll be all right.
That's cool, though. Okay, next question. What do you want your visual work to say to the world?
That's a good question. So, visually, I'm a very meticulous person. So, I've had, like, my lectures at AFTA. Obviously, they're not my lectures anymore. I heard from a friend who's now studying at AFTA in second year that they've been talking to, like, all the students about me. And being like, she's the hardest working cinematographer they've ever worked with. She's like one of the best. And it's purely just because I'm meticulous. Mm-hmm. Like I plan my shots. Everything has a meaning. I love symmetry and I love lines. And so like when I'm setting up a camera, I'm thinking about like a canvas. I'm thinking, cool, if the lines, like what are the lines meaning? And if a character's crossing a line, could I use that to like create like this motif in the film? You know, because I mean, at the end of the day, not everyone's going to realize what you're doing. They're just going to be like, oh, they're just going to see the story. And that's all cool.
Yeah.
But there are like a handful of people in that cinema that's going, oh, that was a nice shot. Mm. Oh, that was clean. And it's like that. That's what I like. I love cultivating that in people. It's like even with my music, I love cultivating an interest in it, in other people, just by how I'm doing it.
Yeah.
And so I'd hope to do that. But in story-wise, as I said earlier, I'm obsessed with like war films. So I would love to tell war stories and like from like real people, like go and interview people who were like descendants or relatives of people who were in wars, find their stories and tell them so that I could move people with emotion too.
Favorite war film?
Oh, it's All Quiet on the Western Front. It's a German war film.
Which one? The new one or
the new one?
The new one. The I new actually one. Haven't watched that one, but let's go check it out.
You should watch it. It's good. Yeah.
Cool. All right, your next multi-choice question. Mm. Let's say a director asks you to make a simple scene. So someone walking down a hallway.
Okay.
Feel really tense and suspenseful just with how you film it. What are some of your go-to visual tricks? Is it A, following closely behind the person? B, showing only parts of their body or the hallway? C, using shadows and dim lighting? Or D, making the camera movements really uneasy?
I suppose C, but I'd also make use of framing, because if it's trying to be tense and you're trying to like wonder, okay, what's going to happen to this character, you'd ideally want to frame the hallway would be the actual subject in the frame, not the character. And so you'd frame for the hallway and most likely keep the character on the left side of the frame, walking toward the left side of the frame. And then like I like the idea of using different close-ups. Obviously sound builds tension, so if there isn't sound it won't be tense. So couple that with sound. Also, like if you're using lights, you know, if you want to draw the attention to maybe something's going to come through the end of the hallway, right? You could have like a bulb flicker and then people's eyes would go to it, and then something, either nothing happens, that builds tension, or something could happen, which, you know, the fruition. Okay. Yes, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Just the way you described that, I was like, pictured in my mind.
Yeah.
I like the fact that you said use the hallway
as the subject.
As the main subject, no, instead the of the character. Person.
Yeah,
so I can kind of picture the hallway really being this big...
Like a gaping hole,
scary.
Even.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like suddenly you feel like it's a mouth that's open.
Yeah.
Don't go down.
Run. Why aren't they running?
You know, just adding on that. So earlier you said, like some people will be like, but why would you put all that detail into that one shot? No one's even going to notice. I think that everyone notices. Mm. Some people will notice, wow, that shot is beautiful. But everyone notices emotionally.
Their emotion,
or
exactly.
There's something on their psyche that they're now thinking because of whatever you did in that shot. So just like for all cinematographers to not be like, it's not that. Like, no, that small detail, even though someone might not be able to go, oh, wow, the subject of the shot is the hallway, not the person. But it still adds.
Yeah.
Like, you get it. Even if it's on like an unconscious or, like that. Like, even if it's there, it's... Subconscious.
Yeah.
Subconscious.
Yeah, I don't want to make my audiences unconscious. Goodness.
Yeah, that would be intense. Like, we're just gonna move right along. Okay, I really like this question. We've asked it before, and I feel like it's gonna become a movie show tradition.
Mm.
So, you can go with anyone alive or dead, right?
Oh goodness.
If you could have dinner, with a historical figure, who would it be and why?
I have two answers.
Okay.
The one is Roger Deakins.
Mm-hmm.
He is, in my opinion, the best cinematographer to ever walk the earth, which is also controversial, don't come at me. But I love his work. I absolutely, like, he's revolutionary in lighting, and oh my goodness, he's just so, so good. And he's also simple. He uses like bare minimal rigs. He plans everything to a T and just does it quickly on sets, which is what I do and what I aspire to do for my career. And so I'd love to have a chat with him and like find out how, like, his inspiration and tips and tricks and any advice, because also like it's a really cutthroat industry, and if you don't want it, you will leave it. And so I'd love to know how he stuck so long, because he only became successful in his 50s. So
sure,
yeah,
wow.
But yeah, and then the other person is Christopher Nolan. Because
that Chris. Man's incredible.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah.
Christopher Nolan.
Yeah. Great. Except I... so I am of Greek descent.
Oh, okay.
Cypriot, actually. But anyways, Greek Cypriot. And he's now working on the film... what is the name of that film?
Odyssey.
Yeah, it is. Mm. Okay, because I looked at the spelling and I was just like... Okay, anyway. So basically it's Greek. It's a Greek god, isn't it?
Yeah, I believe
Or Greek warrior, whatever. Mm. So they're filming in Greece, but there's been a whole uproar because they've used no Greek actors. I'm not laughing. So like the Greeks are mad, people. They're like, how can you make a Greek film and not use one single Greek? There's Zendaya, yeah. There's Tom Holland, yeah. There's Robert Pattinson, but there's not one Greek person. So
you want to know a fun story about that?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I'm of the opinion you cast for whoever fits the role.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. The problem is, in order to get funding, you need to have... So they actually look at the actors' followings, and you have to have a collective following out of your main actors, right? And so if you're casting, like for in this example, if you're casting a Greek actor who doesn't have a following, right... that means you have to cast someone else who has a bigger following in a different role to make up that gap.
Mm.
And unfortunately, on such a big production, you need a lot of funding. And so you need a lot of following, because then that kind of, in the funder's mind, secures the bag, you know. And so that's why they hire so many big names, so that they meet that quota. And so if they hire one small name, that means they have to hire like a triple A actor instead of just an A actor.
Yeah.
And that's a lot more money. And yeah.
Suppose
it's unfortunate, but
unfortunately, the film industry is a business.
Yeah, exactly.
Unfortunately,
it's a business, guys.
Yeah,
yeah.
So, anyway, you're the next question.
Yeah, you can always give the guy. I mean, they're gonna have a Greek accent, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I hope so.
Yeah. Just spend a week with.
And I'm sure he's gonna be trained by a Greek.
Exactly.
The maybe they're still not happy though, people.
Maybe the crew will have Greek people in it.
That no, they will do that. Exactly. So they definitely so, there is job creation that happens because of so that will, but obviously like not one Greek actor. Just remember these are Greeks, people.
You know what? They're gonna watch it, they're gonna enjoy it, they'll be like
Yeah, okay, fair.
We'll let this one go for now. All right, so what's one piece of advice about seeing the world around you that you've learned from being a cinematographer?
Mm.
Something anyone can apply in their daily life? A, pay attention to the way light changes throughout the day. B, look at things from different angles. C, notice the details you might usually overlook. D, think about how you would frame a particular... I feel like it's all of them, eh? Think about how you would frame a particular moment if it were a movie.
Mm. I would say all of them, but I'd also add on there.
Oh, there you go.
And I'd add on to notice and appreciate color, because my goodness, if like, oh, the earth is so beautiful.
Yeah.
And like the different times of days, because okay, this is a little nerdy, but the the color temperature of the sun changes throughout the day.
Yeah.
Right. And obviously, color is just a result of light. So if you take light away, there's no color. So dependent on where the sun is in the day and how much light you have, the colors actually change and how you perceive colors change. And it's just such a fascinating thing. It's like if you're driving to wherever you're driving in the morning, if you look around like the buildings and how like the colors that they are, those colors will be different than when you're driving home in the evening. Mm. And it's just it's so cool. It's so beautiful. And it's like inspiring to me to like actually realize how many colors are around you and how vibrant they are. And the world is not gray, guys.
No.
The world is not gray.
What is your favorite time of... Because I have a favorite time of day with the sun.
Yes.
What is your favorite time?
Okay. I would say like 2 hours before sunset.
So what, like 4 p.m.?
Yeah, but then in winter it would be...
But okay. Later on.
A little, yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm the same.
Yes.
It's where the sun, like everything, the shadows are long.
Yeah.
Like there's like this very orangey,
very warm.
Yes, like very warm feel. And like I'll walk into my room and I'll just be like, and then the sunset's like, oh, damn. Yeah, no. Okay, next question.
Yeah.
How do you balance creative vision with technical limitations of a shoot?
Oh, So I'm a troubleshooter at heart.
Uh-huh.
That's my favorite part about film, is that it's technology. And as we all know, technology doesn't always work.
Yeah.
And you have to just figure it out, man. And so I actually thoroughly enjoy that part of film. It makes me more inspired. So it's like the ticking off the boxes if something's not working. For example, I had a shoot in the Vol, right? And we were planning to do a shot. We were shooting with the Arri Mini, but we had a B cam, which was the Canon C70 on a gimbal. Now, we were only going to use the gimbal for one shot, right? One shot. It was like a rotating shot around a character in this desolate field. And so obviously the field would move behind them, but they wouldn't because you're perfectly rotating around them. And we go to calibrate the gimbal and it wouldn't calibrate. And we're going, oh my goodness, did we break the gimbal? We haven't even used it. We find out, like, we had to troubleshoot. But when we got back, we found out that the Ronin gimbals cannot calibrate without satellite signal. And because we were in the middle of nowhere, there was no signal. And so it wouldn't calibrate.
That's wild.
Yes, we didn't know this. So fun fact, if you're planning to go shoot in the middle of nowhere, your gimbal won't work.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like it was just troubleshooting. It was going, cool, we can't use this piece of gear that we kind of need for this shot.
Yeah.
So how do we do the sequence in a different way that still achieves the same purpose? Because at the end of the day, everything you're doing, every piece of gear you're using, every light, every lens, there's a purpose behind why you're using it. There's like an emotion that you're trying to create and like a feeling you're trying to create. And that feeling can be created in various ways. You just got to find those ways. So if you're like, oh, you lost your 12 millimeter lens, like, oh, you were going to do like a nice distorted close up, now you can't. What other emotions can you evoke? What other like techniques can you use to create that distortion, right? You could like slap a tighter lens on, and you can maybe do like a dolly track, or if you had a zoom lens, you could do a dolly zoom, and those would all like create the same emotion. And so it's it's just thinking about what you know and being confident. Believe that you know what you're doing. Even if you don't, just lie to yourself. I know what I'm doing. If this isn't working, cool. What is other options? What can we do?
At the end of the day, we all don't know what we're doing. Exactly. So just like I'm joking.
Exactly.
I'm going to try that next time. Ryan, is everything okay? Yeah, no. It's good.
You have to, man. You definitely have to.
So the first thing is I like what you say about that, because I find often when we have to problem solve, that's when like my creativity peaks.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, and then I end up figuring out or doing something and I'm like, damn, I never even wanted to do that in the first place. But like that came out of actually not being exactly. And then the second thing that I'm like a firm believer of this, especially when it comes to editing, fake it till you make it.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And everything, man. No one actually knows what they're doing. Like, it's even if they're good at what they do and they plan, and we're all just faking it. We all just, we have an interest and we're like, this is cool, so let's do it. But it's all fake. But also, I have a theory on the creativity and troubleshooting. I have a theory that creativity is just troubleshooting.
Sure.
Like, if you know how to problem solve, if you know how to identify a problem and come up with solutions, that is what creativity is. Mm. So, like, creative blocks are just in your mind. They're not real. Like, if you're like in a place where you can't create, you're like, oh, I don't know what to create, I'm in a creative block, just think, okay, what is my problem actually? Like, what am I trying to solve here? What am I trying to create, right? And then just go down the list, man. Just list every solution you can think of, and one of them will inspire you, and one of them will go, actually, hold on, we could do this. We could move the camera, we could go handheld, I don't know. Like, there's a lot of solutions.
Yeah.
And then creativity is born, you know.
True.
Yeah.
So I'll ask the question, but so forget about being technically perfect for a moment. What's the most visually imperfect or messy shot you've ever been really proud of because it captured a raw emotion or a real moment?
There's two. So there's two answers. So with the gimbal one, we unfortunately we had already struck down the Arri. So we would have just picked that up and shot. But then we took the Canon off of the gimbal and we went, cool, we're just gonna shoot, right? We want the scene to be messy, okay? Because we wanted that spinning around and like the quick movements. And so we're like, okay, so if we do it handheld, we also have to kind of have that vibe. Mm. But we can't spin around because, I mean, no one's that skilled to like go around a character and it not and not bounce. So we literally... I gave my camera actually to my first AC, right? And I went, you're going to do this. Okay. And I was sitting with the actor and he's in the center and there's characters surrounding him, like out in the field. And so he, the scene was that like he got transported into this field. He's battling with PTSD, and these are all characters from the moment that where he saw his comrade, his friend get killed, right? And so it's he's like he's seeing the one, and then he turns around and he sees another one, and like he's like turning around and like being overwhelmed, and he's busy hearing them in his head whispering, "It's not your fault," just over and over and over, right? And so we were like, okay, cool. So if he is moving, we can maybe follow his head movement. So if the camera is behind him, and obviously the actor, brilliant actor by the way, but he is trying to just concentrate on his emotion, so he doesn't remember where they are. So I'm busy screaming out who he must look at, right? And then like running behind the camera so I don't get in the shot, and it's like on uneven terrain and everything. But then so we like whip with him, so he looks behind him, we name a character, he looks, the camera goes, and like that kind of thing. And then we coupled that with clean close-ups of each of the characters, so that you have like these very moving and disorientating shots of just the actor's perspective. Well, sorry, looking at the actor, and then couple that with the actor's perspective of the clean characters in the field. And then it worked fantastic. It was one of the best scenes in the film.
Sure.
Which was fantastic to get there, because we got into post and they were like, "Chris, you got to come in because this isn't shot listed and we've got no idea what's happening." And I was like, "Yeah, okay, I'll come help edit the scene," because it was improvisation like the whole way, just 100%, like shot list in the bin for that scene. But yeah, off love. And then the other one, it was the last scene that we shot for one of the days, and our cutoff time was 9, and so if they get footage after 9, they delete it. Because it's not in the contract, and so because they technically they didn't pay you past 9.
Yeah.
So if they get the footage and it says past 9, then there's like legal implications. So they delete it before it gets to the servers. Anywho, so it was the torture scene from his memory, and we wanted like the nice close-ups of every detail and everything, and we had 3 minutes left.
Yeah.
Okay. And we had no close-ups. And I wanted the character to go to, so his friend got hung. And so we did a really cool like POV hung shots where we just like lifted the camera up. It was so cool. But then I just wanted a shot where he comes to the character and takes his dog tags and goes away. And I'm like, we can't do this in a sequence. You just have to do it with one shot. There's 2 minutes left. I hit roll. I just go, guys, just go to the, and so we're going, there's no sound in the scene. We're just running, and he goes to it, and it's just handhold all the way, right? And it's like the longest take. And it's just me following him, going to from his chair to the guy in the foreground, and we lift up with him, and he takes the dog tags, and we just linger on the guy who's hanging. And my focus puller was like playing with the focus, and he was like, it was a little slow in that. And if you just like watch that in the clips, like if you're just doing your footage run through in your dailies, you'd like scrap the shot. You'd like, this is horrible, go away. And then we put it in the edits, and it's like the most captivating emotional shots. Sure. In the whole film, it's like this is, it's so imperfect, but it's so like perfect. Yeah. So you know,
wow.
I remember we shooting a film, and our cinematographer at the time literally just kept saying, what imperfection is perfection. Like he was just like, imperfection is perfection. The girls were just like, okay, this whole film is imperfect but apparently perfect.
Yeah, that's only really sometimes cool. You sparingly.
Yeah, don't. Okay, what is advice you wish you'd received when you were starting out? So like you were wanting to get into cinematography, like, okay, I'm going for it. What advice do you wish you'd received?
So, well, not necessarily cinematography, but film, mm-hmm. I suppose, is learn how to talk to people. Goodness, I'm not a people person. I'm a task person and like a problem solver. So to me, I'm like, the most efficient way to work is just to avoid people's emotions. Just, you know, just to streamline for the work. Ignore people. if there's problems, shame, that's your problem. I'm just holding the camera. I'm just planning the shots. And unfortunately, you can't work like that. Film is a people industry. And I've like come into a lot of problems just because I never took the time to learn how to talk to people and how to communicate. and how to actually just work with someone. And you need to work with someone. It's like I have a first AC I work with on everything, and we just understand one another so well. And that is like the best asset you can have in this industry. If you find someone that you can work with and you understand one another, like you can tell what they're gonna think. You don't even have to ask them to do what you were going to, because they can see the same things as you. It is invaluable. It makes your life 100 times better. It makes the experience 100 times better. So get you one of those. Or like if you find someone, like just hold on to them, man.
Yeah.
But then with cameras specifically, is just find a way to become obsessed. Like just learn everything you can. Every little tech thing, what every button's called, what every screw is called. Learn like the ins and outs. Because the thing is, in the industry, if you're on a set and you don't know the name of a clamp, they're going to tell you to get off the set because you don't know what you're doing. And it's in those little nuances that you actually gain an interest, because now you like, you know everything. You know what the mounts are called, and you know even how it was constructed. And it's just so interesting. It's like, oh, this is sick. Maybe one day I'll like design clamps, you know. It's things like that. There's nuances that you can just get yourself so involved in. Makes the experience better.
Mm. And it would make the experience better. I like that, yeah. And actually, if you think about it, as while you were saying, like, find someone that you enjoy working with and work well with. Like, if you look at these big directors and you look at the, like, most people don't notice this, but if you look at, like, the people that they've worked with, a lot of the time it's the same cinematographer, it's the same music composer, it's the same production design. It's literally, like, the same people.
The actors,
like, Christopher Nolan's a very good example. Yes. You just watch him. He, like, keeps the same team around him, and then they just get better and better and better.
So, I mean, film, there's so much politics in film,
which
is so sad, because, I mean, we're just trying to make art here, but there's a lot of politics. And so if you find people that you like working with, the politics just decreases so much. Like, there's no drama. You're just there to work. You understand one another. And that's why the big ones, they just stay with the same team, because it's easier. It's better. You know what they're going to do. You know that they're capable. You don't have to fight. You can trust them, and you're flip. If you trust people on the set, your stress just decreases so much. It's when you don't trust them that, oh, there's so many issues. There's so many issues. But yeah.
Crazy. All right. My last question. If you could have any object from a movie set as a souvenir, not for its technical value, but for its visual coolness, what would it be?
Visual coolness.
Visual coolness.
Oh.
Everyone needs something that is just visually cool.
Visually cool.
Makes life better.
That's a hard question. I think. Hold on. I need to think of what the actual prop was. So one of my favorite films is The Batman.
Ah,
okay. Yes, The Batman.
The Batman, people.
Because it goes back to the dark roots of the Batman story, and I love that, because I played like the Arkham games and all that.
Uh-huh.
Fantastic. So I would get, this is very weird, but I would get the mask that the Riddler wore.
Cool.
Yeah, that little, just hang it somewhere. Actually, I'd put it in the back window of my car. So, so that if it drives behind me, sees the,
it's like,
they're like, what's that? Yeah.
That's very cool, though.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
This has been very, very interesting.
Yeah.
If you have not taken out a notebook and written things down, you need to rewatch the show again. Go get a notebook. Enjoy. That was second. No, thank you. This was very, very valuable. And yeah, I wish you all the best with your future in film with the obsession and just keeping at it. Yeah. So thank you very much for joining us. Hopefully we'll be able to have you on the show again. And then you can tell us all the other crazy and wonderful. And yeah, because set life is fun.
Set life is fun.
And then it's not. But then it is, you know, it should go back to being fun.
Looking back, it's fun.
Yeah, that wasn't funny. Now it's funny, but yeah, no. So thank you very, very much.
Thank you for having me.
And yes, we will link social media. We'll link social media down below. So if you want to go and follow Chris on her journey, you can. But yes, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Really appreciate it. This has been The Movie Show.
On Active TV.
Yeah. Peace.
Active FM. Radio has never been better.